This is News from Scotland. I'm Hugh Stewart. This is Yvonne Alexis and Jeanette Hill. So we're going to give you the news that we've come across this week, week ending the 19th of April, is that right? Indeed. Now, I'm going to start off with news from the Scottish Government about the new Climate Change Engagement Fund. Scotland's community, cultural and education groups will be able to bid for support from a fund aimed at engaging people in tackling the climate emergency. The £250,000 Climate Engagement Fund will support activities such as climate festivals, skills workshops, art exhibitions and youth development programmes, all aimed at increasing people's understanding of climate change and encouraging climate action. The annual fund has already supported 8 projects and funded a total of £550,000. These include the Building Futures Galloway project, which has equipped people in that region with the skills to improve the energy efficiency of historic buildings and apply those techniques to their own homes. Net Zero Secretary Mary McCallum said, "Scotland is fully committed to meeting our target of net zero emissions by 2045. As part of this, it's important that people understand the nature and the scale of a climate emergency." Okay, well, I'll move on to my next story before we hear from you guys. So, holiday football is into extra time. A joint initiative between the Scottish Government and the Scottish Football Association is supporting low-income families. Launched by the First Minister with a £2 million Scottish Government investment last year, the programme provides before-school, after-school and holiday activities to around 2,700 children each week. The Extra Time programme aims to tackle poverty by delivering accessible and affordable activity clubs for children from low-income families. During a visit to Dundee United Sports Club, which received £95,000 from the fund and provides support during term time and school holidays, Deputy First Minister Shona Robertson said, "School holidays should be a time for fun and enjoyment for children, but for many families, it's a time of added financial pressure." Ian Maxwell, Chief Executive of the Scottish Football Association, said, "It's fantastic to see the impact of this vital programme already across the country since its launch last year, building on the initial success of the pilot in Ayr." Next story, it's also from the Scottish Government. Yvonne's going to discuss Tide Pubs. What's going on there, Yvonne?
Well, there's been new legislation which is not quite finally approved by the Scottish Parliament, but should be very soon, and the plan is to introduce the allowance of a guest beer into the Tide Pub estate. Now, it's a good idea in some ways, because people visiting pubs want a better range of alcohol than they're currently being allowed. However, I think it's only one Tide beer, and that's not really a great deal if you look at the bigger picture. Many discerning drinkers prefer a bar with a much wider choice and will vote with their feet if that's not available to them. I do have some qualms about it. I mean, yeah, it's fine, we're talking about a guest beer, but I think it needs to, that will benefit the larger rather than the smaller breweries. And some small independents, notably in Dundee, have expressed their concerns. So I think the situation is fraught, although it is a step in the right direction.
Okay, so we'll see how that goes. Let's look at iWrite. Now, we reported last week that the iWrite Festival in Glasgow, the writing festival, was going to be pulled because it had lost all of its funding from Creative Scotland. So what's the update on that?
Well, congratulations to iWrite, because they've successfully secured £65,000 worth of funding from the Colin Weir Charitable Foundation, following the very recent and much-discussed decision by Creative Scotland to pull its funding of the event at such a close time to its launch. This is the 20th anniversary of iWrite, which is a very ground-up writing festival which has attracted many well-known literary figures and a good, strong local, national and international audience. Due to the funding disarray, the festival will be rather truncated this year. However, a full list of events is posted on their website and includes such authors as Val McDermott, Lino Shriver, Damien Barr and many others, all of whom have been vocal in expressing their concern about the Creative Scotland decision. The festival will be curtailed to a certain degree this year because of the late decisions, but some of the events will actually take place further on through the year rather than in the usual 2-3 week space. But you will see on their website all the details of that.
And so look at the website, it's towards the end of May, isn't it?
Yes.
Right, so we'll have to make sure if we can get News from Scotland along to some of the events. Okay, moving on then. So I came across a story from Europe during the week that Italy is against surrogacy. And you've got an update on that too, and how does that affect, well, what's Scott's law on surrogacy? This means that a woman being basically paid to carry somebody else's baby, and the Italian government has ruled that out completely.
Well, interestingly, it is legal in Scotland for what they term as altruistic reasons. There is some debate about what altruistic actually means and how altruistic it can be, but anyway, that is the kind of the premise of the Scots legislation. Italy is very against it. It's seen as a right-wing thing. I have my own views on this whole surrogacy thing, because I think, first of all, everyone doesn't have the right to have a child. They may wish to have one, but they don't have the right to have one. And I understand that, you know, that it must be a real ache if you're not able to have a child naturally. I get that. But there is a cost. I would say the child-bearing mother bears a considerable mental and physical cost. I'm not sure if there's been any proper research into the impact of this on the surrogacy family. If you're a child within that family and your mother is pregnant, she has a child, you never meet that child, you don't meet your sibling, you would expect to do so. There may be a partner who's also got concerns about that. There's a whole wider issue. There's the issue of the payments, which I think, you know, supposedly in legislation, you're only allowed to be paid expenses.
Right, yeah.
Well, what constitutes expenses?
Legitimate expenses, so it's not to be a job. Right?
No, it's not a job, but if you've got, you know, if you develop a mental health issue or a physical health issue because you're maybe being a surrogate for more than one child, you know, there is a cost, there is a physical cost to that. And also it must affect the dynamic of the family where the child comes into. If the father has supplied the seed, let's call it that, because that's what it is, then the female partner isn't part of that process. There might be some resentments, even although, yes, it's what is wanted, but, you know, things can be brought up in that. So I think there's more research required into that than is current. And I can understand the Italian approach, or Giorgio Maloney. I can understand her. She's been very hard about it, and I get that, but I think there should be a wider debate, and it should be more nuanced.
Yes, well, maybe she wasn't nuanced at all. She said it's children for sale, and she's completely against that. Well, maybe we'll discuss that later on. Now, we're going to hear from Jeanette in a few minutes, but you've put me down for the next story, so just take it easy for a couple of minutes then. Now, also in Europe, we heard last week that European Parliament narrowly backed new proposals to update the continent's welcome for thousands of asylum seekers or immigrants arriving mainly from the Mediterranean. The huge increase in arrivals in recent years has mainly been handled by Italy, Greece or Malta. But a new pact sees responsibility for new arrivals being shared among the EU 27. The pact talks about mandatory solidarity. But Poland and Hungary are not happy at all. They see it as an attack on their sovereignty. The main ideas of a new system are a new information database with biometrics to be used in common throughout all 27 member states, as is the new asylum procedure, which will not permit entry to anyone who comes from countries regarded to be not dangerous, or if the applicant presents with false or misleading information. And as for a mandatory solidarity, the country must accept, each country has to accept a certain quota, but if they don't, they pay a fee towards those who do, of 20,000 euros per migrant turned down. So that's a mandatory part of it. Ylva Johansson, the EU Commissioner, says that the new regulation will allow for better EU border protection and also be good for the vulnerable, while swiftly returning those not entitled to stay. The new rules are a result of years of negotiation, and they may bring Europe together in a united policy on immigration and an attempt to avoid criticism from both the political right and the political left. But critics on both sides don't sound satisfied. Incidentally, the EU is rushing to get measures like this through because the final session of the EU Parliament has just begun, and that breaks up at the end of this month, I think, and then they move on to the European elections at the start of June. Okay, that's back to Scotland now, and we've had a couple of opinion polls recently. Jeanette, what's the latest?
Yeah, there is an opinion poll from Redfield and Wilton, which is all about independence, and it says there's a 51% on yes and a 49% on no. So, will independence be on the ballot paper? a poll last week by Redfield and Wilton asking, should Scotland be an independent country, found yes on 51 and no on 49. Other polls show yes scoring at least in the high 40s. So we can say that for many years anyway. Half of Scottish voters want to raise the country to sovereign nation status. So oddly, for the main independence parties though, support for the SNP continues to drop, and maybe for the first time in years a major poll shows Labour ahead. We don't know how that's going to come out though later on, when we get nearer the elections. So compared to the last UK election though, the one which made Johnson Prime Minister, oh, remember that, in 2019, these figures add up to say 27 more MPs for Labour, with the SNP losing 30 of these. Obviously we take opinion polls with a pinch of salt. And the Conservatives, it says, the opinion polls are saying they're still going to hold on to six MPs. So it certainly seems to be suggesting, though, that there is an SNP decline and it's continuing under Holmes's leadership. Perhaps the hate attacks that are online currently contribute to that, and the mainstream media certainly seems to be pushing ahead with those hate attacks on our First Minister. But who knows? Maybe they should have waited a bit to get a new leader. Certainly, maybe the more popular rival was the one to have. Who knows what that...
We'll discuss that later.
Absolutely. Yep.
And Jeanette, you're also looking at the debate about the cash review continues. This was a report, of course, for England and Wales about the JIDS clinic, and that already caused a banning of puberty blockers to children in England and Wales. Does that happen? Does that affect Scotland?
So the Scottish Government agree and ban puberty blockers. Have they done that yet? No. Well, SNP MP Joanna Cherry has written to the Scottish Chief Medical Officer, calling for the health services in Scotland to follow the lead of the CAS review, in a letter co-signed by the former Scottish Green leader, Robin Harper, MSP. Ms Cherry calls for the immediate and long-term changes to the delivery of healthcare to gender-questioning children. The pair also call for an end to puberty blockers to be used in the Scottish NHS. The review, chaired by Hilary Cass, concluded that children accessing gender identity services in England needed to be provided with more holistic care, which looked at their mental health, give them a full mental health assessment and a psychological assessment, looking at whether or not these children were neurotypical or not, and if they needed support and even diagnosis on autism and other issues such as ADHD, or indeed if some of them had been the victims of some sort of abuse. Mm-hmm. So I also found a lack of evidence on the current gender treatment that's going through, and it was saying some of it was based on ideology rather than based on actual medical research. So again, as we say, Joanne Cherry and Robin Harper are asking for the Scottish Government to do not carry out their own review, because she said that'll take years, there's no need for it. 3.5 years it took for Dr Cass to do her review. She's just saying we should really be thinking about implementing the review. And I think the Scottish Government have said that they're looking through the review and they will make decisions. They're not making any decisions right now for closing off the Sandiford Clinic's treatment or any other decisions on this type of therapy. They're just going to be looking at the report, and then they may well come to a decision on that later on.
Okay, so no decision at the moment. We'll discuss that when we finish with the news reports. A couple more stories to come. First of all, back to me and the Hate Crime Act, which we discussed last week. It came into effect, of course, at the start of this month. So, of course, last week a lot was made of the 7,000 complaints registered by Police Scotland in only week one, and people are saying, well, how many complaints? It's going to be 1 million complaints by the end of the year. Well, what's happened in week two? From 7,000 complaints, it's down to 1,832. That's a drop of 75%. Not surprisingly, so all those complaints came in week one, and that doesn't look like continuing. And anyway, in the vast majority of all of those cases so far, all 8,000 plus cases, no further action is being taken. So was that much, a lot of fuss about nothing? Well, the other aspect, of course, that we discussed last week is that if you do receive one of these non-hate complaints against you. Right, maybe it's not a crime, but you still might have an incident recorded against your name and you might not know anything about it. So that question is still there. Now, Murdo Fraser, a Conservative MSP, found that he himself is a recipient of a hate notice. So that came to his attention, and he's saying to Police Scotland, it's actually breaking several laws to keep files on people. It's probably breaking the Data Protection Act, and it probably questions the European Human Rights. Kind of ironic that the Conservatives are taking that one up. So those issues are still there then. There's a number of complaints that had fallen, not surprisingly, but there's still this question of what happens to these non-crime hate incidents. Is that recorded in your against your name, and could that come back on you at some point if you're applying for jobs? The Hate Crime Act protects 8 groups in our population. They're listed, I haven't listed all of them, but it includes people who have had a sex change or members of religious and ethnic minorities, but it misses out hate acts against women, who are 52% of the Scottish population, and as you'll observe, also 2/3 of the News for Scotland team. The Scottish Government explained that hate acts against women will be covered in a bill dealing with misogyny, and that's defined in the Cambridge Dictionary as feelings of hating women or the belief that men are much better than women. The bill will presumably draw on the report of Baroness Helena Kennedy, which she researched and presented to the Scottish Government in 2022. And this, the eminent KC, argued that misogyny is a human rights issue and that it drives much of the violence and abuse experienced by women. The report recommends the creation of a new offence of stirring up hatred against women, and or of issuing threats invoking rape or sexual assault or disfigurement of women, whether online or offline. To cut long story short, it's a much longer report than that. This week, First Minister Hamza Yousaf clarified the government's intent, saying that anyone affected by misogyny would be covered whatever their biological sex. Some women's groups have complained that trans women will have more rights than actual women, as they will be protected by 2 Scottish laws. There's no timetable for a new law yet, although the government aims to introduce the bill during the current parliamentary term, which runs out in the spring of 2026. Okay, now let's look at Scotland and Britain's stance on nuclear weapons. Over to Jeanette.
So I've been a wee bit frightened recently because, you know, we've been banded about. I accidentally got the cover of the Daily Mirror, I think it was, the other day, and it's saying we're on the brink of nuclear war between Iran and Israel. So in Scotland we've been thinking about that for quite a while, haven't we, really, for a whole variety of reasons. Laptop jumped out. Okay, as it does. Just give me 2 seconds.
Israel, of course, is a nuclear power, but of course Iran isn't.
I thought Iran
does not have nuclear weapons.
Doesn't it?
No.
I thought it did.
No, they've got some nuclear plant, but they're not capable of making
a bomb. Isn't it that we don't know if they've got them or not? Anyway.
They told me, but that's what we do.
Who knows? So I'm not, as I say, I don't really, we weren't looking at the sensationalist press on this. I'd prefer Corbyn's Peace and Justice campaign, really looking at, let's find a solution to this. And certainly a solution to the Gaza human rights abuses, but never mind. But a report on in the National, actually, newspaper in 22 said that between 2015 and 2020, the UK government increased secretly the number of Trident nuclear warheads stored in the Clyde. And according to Nuke Watch, which monitors the transport of nuclear weapons, 37 new warheads were delivered from England to Scotland during that period. Specifically, 9 warheads were added in 2019 and 13 in 2020. So the Ministry of Defence said it didn't deny that these deliveries had taken place, but it sort of said that there was technological and doctrinal threats. So this was the reason why they had to increase the number of warheads that were in the Clyde. So obviously the Scottish Government was quite annoyed at this and made a complaint about it, especially since they hadn't been told anything about it, as if they would be. And SNP, of course, has declared for a long time, you know, that given independence, we would be getting rid of Trident and we would be a nuclear weapon-free country. And I think sort of prevailing peoples of Scotland would agree that they want that, really. Most people in Scotland seem to want the idea of there's a, quite a high percentage of us in any poll that say that we don't want Trident to be here. And if there's, if we're looking at the current threat, we particularly don't want to be really in the middle of it. But I suppose if we're going to go, we go fast. and last year was the 60th celebration of Ding Dong Dollar album, 70th? Was it 70th? Yeah, Ding Dong Dollar album. Yeah, 1963 it was out, so that's 70 years last year. Yeah, that's
right.
That
was 60, yeah. Yep.
60, is it?
Yeah,
everyone
may have just done
produced by the anti-Polaris movement, who didn't want the American nuclear submarines in the Holy Loch. The music was at the core of the protest in the Glasgow Song Guild with the Blythemans, Morris and Marion, who we have recently just lost, and Jim McLean and Hamish Henderson, supported by Pete Seeger, who gave them the money to produce the album, I believe. Mm. Lots of witty, hard-hitting protest songs, and of course the great Freedom Come All Ye, which some people even think should be the Scottish national anthem, who knows. But certainly a Republican anti-war movement, probably socialist as well, yeah, encouraging our past songs and new songs and new generations of writers, and they were focused, really, started really focusing on the anti-Polaris movement. So right now, one of those songs has been chasing through my head a lot. I'm sure some of our listeners will know it and they'll sing along with us. It's Ding Dong Dollar, Ding Dong Dollar, everybody holler. Go on. You can't spend a dollar when you're dead. And that's definitely what I think right now. I don't want Trident. I don't want any warheads in our waters at all. Yeah. So, and Believe in Scotland, the umbrella organisation representing 142 local Yes groups, are having a demonstration on Saturday pro independence. But there'll be lots of anti nuclear weapons people out there, and they'll be singing the songs and waving the flags for a nuclear-free Scotland as well. And they're having an independence weekend, actually. Saturday's the rally from Kelvin Way to George Square, and if you go on the Believe in Scotland Facebook page, they'll tell you exactly when and where. And on the Sunday, they're having a sing-around just outside Langside Halls. And I'm going to be singing Ding Dong Dollar there. And we'll be singing Freedom Come All Ye and lots of other songs celebrating independence. Well, asking for? Are we asking for? Do we want to be asking? Who knows? But do come along to it. It's a wee bit of a carnival event, I think, on the Sunday.
Okay, yeah. So that's Saturday, starting in the West End of Glasgow, yep, and then meet marching towards George Square, mm-hmm. And then the Sunday that's in Langside, that's in Shawlands, south side of Glasgow.
Yep.
If you're in Scotland at the weekend, I know a lot of listeners are further away than that, but that's what's happening anyway. So we'll keep you up to date. We'll see if we can get the camera and microphones along to
one or both
of those events at the weekend.
Yeah. Definitely.
Mm. Now, we're trying to cover the whole of Scotland. I was in Edinburgh last week looking at some of the events, some of the demonstrations for against Israel's attack in Gaza last week. And, Jeanette, you've been in the southwest, Dumfries and Galloway.
And I'll just want to talk a little bit about Kirkcudbright Farmers Market. Do you remember that famous song by Matt McGinn?
The centipede,
that's the one. Dancing centipede, that's how people think of us, what they think of when they think of Kirkcudbright. So the Dumfries and Galloway is a wonderful little town, and called Kirkcudbright. And most tourists that are coming to Scotland, they head up to the Highlands, don't they? You know, whether they're trying to find Jamie from Outlanders, I'm not very sure. But there is this sort of attraction of going to the Highlands, that's where we go. But really, think about going to Dumfries and Galloway. It's a wonderful part of the world, it certainly is. It's got mountains and fabulous beaches and cold lochs and all sorts of stuff like that, and fertile farmlands and all sorts of stuff that is worth having a look at. Lots of tourists also trek east, don't they, to the borders and up that way, and they go to our capital city, Edinburgh, which is indeed a fine place, Auld Reekie. It's got history and culture and array of cafes and bars and all sorts of art and stuff for you to see. It certainly is. But I would argue, like the Pet Shop Boys, go west, you know, have a wee look, at our southwest, Dumfries and Galloway, or Stewartie, to be more precise. That's where Kirkcudbry is, I think. It's got wonderful woodland beaches, and of course, woodland walks and fabulous beaches, but it's also got that magnificent dark skies patch. Fabulous if you're a stargazer.
Yeah, is that in the Galloway Forest?
It's very near it. It's right next to the eye. There's loads of dark sky patches round about Kirkcudbry. It's been a royal borough since 1455. That's not the Hanoverians, though. That's a different set of royals that made it a royal borough. And it lies southwest of Castle Douglas and Dalbeattie, two other great places to visit. It's on the River Dee, 4 miles from the Irish Sea. It has a toll booth, a Broughton House, lots of. It is known for being an artist town, museums, a castle, a harbour, a fishing harbour, working fishing harbour, as well as a marina. And you get some beautiful fresh fish there as well, I would say. Definitely. And on that, you can get lots of stuff actually at the farmer's market. The next one is the last Sunday in April. It started up again in March. And that's where you get all your local produce from. Lots of local producers. Annie's the Bakers, I think she's called Annie's Bakers. Wonderful, amazing cakes. Like, I need some, but they're utterly amazing. And there's fabulous cheeses. I think it's called the Damn Fine Cheese Company, which is fabulous, and it is indeed damn fine. Annette's Baking, that's what it is, not Annie. Annette's Baking. There's the Ann and Water, which does fantastic mutton pies from their farms straight to the oven, I suppose, and then to the marketplace. Yeah, wonderful. And of course, there's also lots of craft beers, craft cider, craft gin there, and we're fabulous for making gin here in Scotland. We're not just whiskey that we import. We're one of the biggest, I suppose, exporters of gin, I believe, aren't we? I think so.
Well, a lot of Scottish brewers or distillers do make gin as well. It might not be clear in the bottle. You know, it might say London gin or something like that, but it probably came from here.
We made it in the first place. So I would say get down to Kirkcudbry and sample it. You know, don't just go on the trip to Edinburgh or the classic trip up to Oban. Get down to Dumfries and Galloway and have a look around there. You might not meet Jamie. Oh, I wish I'd written that book. All those books. Put a lot of money in that one.
Well, let's have a few minutes to discuss. I don't know how long we've been blethering today, actually. I don't know how long maybe you could put the kettle on now and we'll just have a chat for 10 minutes or so on some of those topics. I wanted to ask you guys, first of all, about Susan Aitken, Glasgow Council leader. So she actually said last week in the papers that she thinks, go back to I Write, she thinks that wouldn't have happened in Edinburgh. If it had been a book festival in Edinburgh, this Creative Scotland would not have pulled the funding with a few weeks to go. She's saying Glasgow, punches above its weight in cultural events with very little help from the creative sector, which she says is biased towards Edinburgh.
Is that reasonable,
do you think?
I think it's perfectly likely, yes. I mean, I would think, what do we hear about the Edinburgh Festival all the time, or the Fringe, but you don't hear so much in the wider media about I Write. It seems to come across as a much more localised event. Mm-hmm. Although, as I was saying earlier on, there's plenty of people come to I Write from all over the world, in fact, but including the authors, who are very supportive and have been very vocal about that.
Yeah.
And very well-known authors as well. So I think, yes, I think there is certainly, you know, not that I wish to say anything at all wrong with Edinburgh, but Glasgow is a very cultural, literary place.
Yeah.
And I think we deserve better.
Well, Glasgow, and you're including Paisley in that, of course.
You know. Well, of course.
Yeah. Well, 200 years ago, Paisley was in the centre of culture. That's just a coincidence. It just happens to be the case. Paisley was just full of poets. Every other weaver was a poet in the times of Robert Tannehill.
My favourite Scottish singer is from Paisley, Jerry Rafferty.
Of course, aye.
So, yeah.
let's not forget the West when it comes to some arts funding.
Although, can I just say that the rest of Scotland might say there's a wee bit, there's a lot of funding goes to the Central Belt and not enough goes to, you know, if you try and tour a place, say to up to Shetlands or other more remote areas, if you like, of Scotland, there is a great deal of difficulty getting funding to take place to other places. So
that's a real shame, actually. Yeah. Remember the 784 company used to go up and down all over, just in a little bus or something. Mm-hmm. And they toured, the Cheevy at the Stag and the Black Oil. Did, everywhere. Mm-hmm. They went everywhere and they got marvellous audience.
That discussion there. We recorded that a couple of days ago and that's now on our YouTube show. If you want to see us, you need to search for at News for Scotland with no spaces and you should find us on YouTube. Now, we recorded that a couple of days ago and today it's the 19th, Friday 19th, and so I have a couple of updates on those stories. First of all, climate. As we reported, the Scottish Government is committed to reaching net zero CO2 by 2045, which is 5 years ahead of most countries. It's one thing to announce a target, however, and another to actually achieve it. The other day, the Scottish Government announced it had abandoned a key milestone to reduce carbon emissions by 75% by the year 2030, following the opinion of the UK Climate Change Committee that it was no longer credible. For the Scottish Government, Mary McCallan announced a new plan to deliver a 2045 target via a series of five-year carbon budgets. Imogen Dow, Friends of the Earth Scotland, said that the 2030 target could have been met, but the Scottish Government's weak package of reheated ideas was never delivered. Sarah Boyack for Scottish Labour said that Scotland was now a world leader in scrapping targets. And Graeme Simpson for the Scottish Conservatives wondered why Scotland's two Green Party ministers had not resigned. Let's go back to the Cash Report and update. MSPs all week have been asking if the Scottish Government would follow NHS England in stopping the controversial prescribing of puberty blockers to children. We heard yesterday that Sandyford Clinic in Scotland, in Glasgow, had already decided a few weeks ago to pause giving these hormones to any more young patients. So why was the Scottish Government stonewalling? Didn't they know? Following the report to the England and Wales Health Service by Dr. Hilary Cass, a reputed paediatrician, doubt has been cast on the evidence that puberty blockers actually do any good, although there is evidence of harm, for example, in reducing children's bone density. Apparently, this pause has the backing of Scotland's Chief Medical Officer, Dr. Gregor Smith. And finally, arresting development. Yesterday, Police Scotland announced that Peter Murrell, former chief executive of the SNP, has been charged with embezzlement. Murrell and his wife, Nicola Sturgeon, had already been questioned by the police earlier this year, along with the SNP's former treasurer, as part of Operation Branch Form. Mr. Murrell was allowed to return home and the case is with the Procurator Fiscal. All media are now under reporting restrictions on this matter, and we'll make no further comment until after the court case in several months' time, and we advise you not to comment either on your social media. And that's our quick news update. News for Scotland is now on YouTube as a video and also here on the various podcast platforms. You're probably hearing me now on Spotify, Podbean or Amazon or Google Podcasts. Please pass us on in your social media. Remember, YouTube, type in at News for Scotland without any gaps and you should get the video. If you're watching that, please click on the like and subscribe. Let's tell more people about News for Scotland. It's news where we are. From me, Hugh Stewart and the team, thanks for listening. We'll see you later.